black and white and red all over, Ian Murta. He can talk football all day.
Good evening and welcome to Black and White and Red All Over. We're here with Ian Murta. Good evening, Ian. How are you?
Well, I'm very, very well. But there's something I really want to get off my chest in this week's show. You know, this is a show where we want to celebrate football, but the decision to scrap FA Cup replays, it's really, really riled me. And I was so pleased to hear the three legends before me have a go at it. And they quite rightly pointed out the money, the potential revenue that lower league clubs would lose, you know, for not bringing back a Manchester United for replays, etc. But I'd just like to talk about the fans. I mean, January is, it's the grimmest month of the year, isn't it? The FA Cup is what keeps it alive. It football fans, they love replays. And we're not just talking about, you know, a Scunthorpe or Halifax or Rochdale from the National League getting a draw against a championship club. You're talking about a Newcastle or a West Ham getting a draw at Manchester United, Man City, looking forward to bringing them back to their place on a cold January night. There's just so, it's so wrong on many fronts. And again, I heard the three legends quite rightly point out the fact that a few days after the season's finished, Newcastle and Spurs are flying to the other side of the world to play a friendly in Melbourne. Now, you know, these are clubs who have European duties, although Spurs don't have this season, who are complaining about the schedules. You know, it does seem as if it is one law for the rich and one for everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much of this that stinks, Ian. You know, we chatted yesterday, this morning on the Footy Breakfast. You look at the FA's website and how they've launched this. Their spin on it was, we're going to give $33 million to grassroots football. Oh, and by the way, we're going to make some changes to the FA Cup. You know, that's how they put this out there. You know, the lack of consultation, the lack of any consideration to anyone else other than the Premier League teams, I think, is absolutely astounding. And, you know, Tranmere,
think of some of the,
yeah, I was just going to say, Tranmere, right, were first off the blocks last night.
They were.
And what a brilliant, brilliant response. And I expected more teams actually today to do a copy and paste and come out and against it. And yes, there have been some, but I thought there would have been more of a backlash, really, with teams coming up and, you know, having their say about this.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to hear from the EFL as well on their stand on this.
Well, you hear a few fans say, why don't clubs boycott the FA Cup? And right now I'm feeling militant enough to back that. But just think of some of the great games in history that wouldn't have been around. I mean, Newcastle fans, please forgive me for mentioning this, but Hereford beating Newcastle in a third-round replay in 71. They voted the greatest ever game at Roker Park on the way to winning the FA Cup in 73 when Sunderland beat Manchester City after a draw at Main Road. Then you've got one of the greatest goals of all time in Manchester United in 99 on the way to the treble, Ryan Giggs' solo effort against Arsenal at Villa Park in a replay. I mean, you know, you're not going to have any of this, and it's just wrong on so many levels. But listen, what I'm glad, Darren, and now that I've got that off my chest, let's focus in on the North East. Now, my first guest, if I did a poll of Borough fans and said, name me three players of the 90s. Now, I'm sure Janinho would get a lot of mentions, Ravanelli would get a lot of mentions, but I would bet my last penny on the fact that my next guest would be included in 90% of polls. Yeah. It's Robbie Musto, the ultimate, well, I was going to say a one-club man. You came to Middlesbrough from Oxford, Robbie, and you went on to play briefly for Charlton and finish your career at Sheffield Wednesday, but you almost felt like a one-club Borough man because you were there for so long and played so many games. I think it was 12 years and over 450 games.
Well, hi, Ian. Thanks very much. That was lovely of you to say that. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. It was almost like a one-club man, wasn't it? My first few years were Oxford, my local team, like 20 minutes away from where I grew up, and that was great. But then 1990, I moved to Middlesbrough, and the best 12 years, of course, in my playing career. And the ending point of Middlesbrough was a little bit sad and disappointing, as it often is when players have to leave, and we couldn't agree a new deal. And I went to Derby, which didn't work out. Their club went into administration, I think, and I ended up at Charlton for a year. I had a bad injury. Then quick finish at Sheffield Wednesday, where I got fit again from a bad back injury, and then it was all over. But of course, yeah, Middlesbrough is a dear place in my heart. You know that. My kids were born there. I spent so much time there. I think we lived out there for 15 years or so until I retired from playing, and then we moved to America. So many great friends, so many great memories. I mean, it almost gets me emotional thinking about my time at the Middlesbrough, because it was such a brilliant time. I always think that I was good for the club and the club were good for me. The club went off in a tremendous direction with the Steve Gibson taking over, and the way the club went forward, it was just pulled me along with it. And I thankfully was able to stick with the teams and the squads and stuff that we had going forward. I loved every bloody minute.
Good. Robbie, we'll go on to your new career as an NBC broadcaster in the United States. But let's talk about Middlesbrough. You know, you're almost unique in the fact that your tenure on Teesside, it just coincided with a total transformation of a club. You know, Middlesbrough, let's face it, when you joined them, they were the self-proclaimed small town in Yorkshire. When you left them, they were a very, very different club, different institution, different team, weren't they?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I mean, like training grounds, like as one example, crikey, we didn't really have a training ground at the start. I think there was Tollesbury Road that we trained at a fair bit. A couple of other places. There was a prison near Yarm that we trained sometimes. There was an area called the Avenue of Trees, I think near Acklam somewhere, where it was just a dry patch of land between a bunch of trees. So, I mean, from that to obviously the training ground, the new training ground, from fish and chips and beers on the back of the bus to chefs, and Ravenelli brought his chef for away games and knock on the door at 10 o'clock on a Friday night, and Ravenelli's chef was there with some little late night treats to just get us going for the next day. So, yeah, my goodness, football changed, Middlesbrough changed, I changed in those 12 years. Incredible difference, really, from start to the finish of that.
Well, that's right. It was clearly a step up when you joined the club from Oxford, but you could never have dreamed of playing at Wembley three times, of being a regular in the Premier League and playing with players who were world superstars.
That's brilliant, brilliant. I mean, you know what, actually, Ian, I think, by the way, and I haven't got the stats right in me, I think when I left for Middlesbrough, I think the season before, Oxford had a better season, were higher in the league. So, of course, I knew Middlesbrough was a bigger and better club and it was going to be the right move. But I just think I think at that time, Borough had a really disappointing season and Oxford was a little higher. But of course, it was the right move. And gosh, I remember meeting Colin Todd on the side of the M1, going through some kind of weird contract negotiation that went by as quick as a flash. And then a few months later, I'm driving up on the A19 and with my dad, and my world had changed. But it was a brilliant move for me in so many ways. And again, like I think what's, you know, in what I do now, and of course friends and stuff I've met in the game, my biggest kind of satisfaction comes from the fact that I have no regrets in my career. No regrets. That's and wonderful. So many former players. It's so many do. And bless them that they constantly think about it, what I could have done, you know, what I did wrong, this injury, that injury, this drinking beers or go, you know, whatever it was, there's regrets. And I can really look back and I can flip in, you know, I can have a beer now and think back. I did as much as I could with my body that got beat up a little bit along the way. But no, that's kind of the proudest bit I can be, that I gave everything that I could, and I had a wonderful career.
You say you've got no regrets, but I've heard a few Borough fans say they regret the fact that you'd left the club by the time it won its first major honour and then went all the way in Europe.
Yeah.
So, you played in two losing League Cup finals and an FA Cup final. So there must be that little part of you which thinks if only I'd been around for the game against Bolt at the Millennium, or for the wonderful run to Eindhoven.
Yeah, of course. But it's not a bitterness, it's a joy. Like, wow, like finally... Because we were so close in. I mean, was it two minutes against Leicester? Emma Heskey bundles the ball over the line, broke my heart.
The
I remember it.
The scruffiest goal of all time,
It was. And I think for Ravanelli's goal, I think I pulled somebody out of the way, you know. If you look at that shot again, I think I just sort of pushed somebody out of the way for him to score. We were two minutes away from making history at the club. And you know, I can't say it's regretful. It's so sad in so many ways and disappointing. But I give everything. We gave everything. I mean, the FA Cup final. My knee was hanging off at the start of the game. It was clicking, and I went off with injury. And of course, Ravanelli went off with injury. So there's regrets. But nothing that I could have. I mean, the build up to that FA Cup final was not great. But that's nothing I can control. The way the club organised that and the spirit at that time after the relegation and stuff was poor. Of course, there's things that I would like to have changed, but nothing that I could have directly kind of, you know, made that much of an impact on some of those really big matters or key moments in my Middlesbrough career.
That's right. I mean, I was at all three games in the 90s, and you know, the first one, well, it was all over in the opening minute, and the League Cup final was long forgotten. In a way, the second one when he lost to Chelsea, it was that game. It was the first League Cup final when Heskey scored that last gasp goal. That's the one. That was the killer, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Juninho at that point, I remember they put a man-to-man on Juninho. They had some guy that didn't really play much, and he was a fit guy, and he just followed Juninho around. I think that was the main... their main tactical ploy.
What was his name? Pontus somebody or other?
Was it somebody like that? Yeah, kind of short guy, I think, with dark hair. Just bloody ran. Right. He could run. And, you know, it's like, to be fair, I've done... Yeah, he was like you. And I've done that a few times. The club have used me to do a few man-to-mans in over a period of... Actually, Liverpool, when we beat Liverpool, I think I did one. Mm-hmm. Me and Steve Baker did a man-to-man on Steve McManaman, who was so bloody good back then. So that works. It works. It's just, and we were just so close. We were just so close. And, God, I've got so many... You know what the other thing that... Just one thing that pisses me off a little bit sometimes when I see these big-time managers and big-time players, and they get their runners-up medals and they throw them in the crowd, or they throw them away, or they don't accept them. Well, I guess everybody's kind of, it means different things to different people. My three bloody runners-up medals are a foot away from my head every night. They're in my little sock drawer next to my bed. The three run, and they mean everything to me. You know, to play in cup finals, Wembley Cup finals, what you dream about as a kid. Yeah, I've got three runners-up medals, but I'm still super proud of those. And it just winds me up a little bit when I sometimes see, you know, these guys that have won stuff in the past, just chuck them away. It's relative. It's all relative. And for me, that they were a big deal, and we were pretty bloody close to winning something.
Well, I think, you know, in 20, 30 years' time, you'll be able to fly back to Teesside, and you'll be treated like a hero. And a lot of these people, maybe more medals with you at other clubs, might not. So I think that's probably that's the proudest medal of the lot, isn't it? The memories and the affection that you all held on Teesside.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. I know it. I know it so much. I get it every day, pretty much every day on social media. Yeah. I get so many kind things that are said. I chuck a few photos on there from old stuff. I got millions of photos and stuff from those days. But I know that, and I've got some of my best friends that me and my wife, you know, we live near now New York City, and it's not easy to get over to UK. My parents are aging a little, and they're not doing great, so. We want to spend more time up in the Northeast when we go back in the future. We got so many friends up there from Wynyard, from when it all began, when the birth of our first one, Elliot, first son Elliot, on the day that the Riverside opened. Is that right? On that August date. Yeah, he was born that we beat Chelsea 2-0, and then I went for me and Caroline, heavily pregnant, went for a dinner and a drink with Jamie Pollock and his girlfriend in Wolverhampton. And during the meal, Caroline said, "I think something's happening." Elliot was born. Yeah, Elliot was born that night. Real quick labour, wow. And what a day! What a bloody day!
Wow.
Riverside opened, and we beat Chelsea, which was a big game. Those bloody goals. So a spectacular day. Yeah. So my son Elliot, who by the way, obviously, he's a big Borough fan right now still. Even though we moved from England or Middlesbrough to America when he was 11, he's still a big Borough fan. And yeah, he was born on the day the Riverside Stadium opened.
Well, before we talk about your new career, I can remember having a chat with someone you know very well, the former head of media at Middlesbrough, Dave Allen. And it was a few years after the UEFA Cup final, and he made a very, very good point. And he said, you only realise the club has been through a golden era when it comes out of it. And there is no doubt that decade from Brian Robson coming to the UEFA Cup final was Middlesbrough's golden era. And I think even the most optimistic Smoggy would acknowledge it's highly unlikely that we'll repeat a European final and four major cup finals in such a short space of time. What do you, obviously Steve Gibson's still there, he's not going to be there forever. Yep. Where do you see Middlesbrough now? Because I know you keep an active eye on him, and what do you see the future for the club?
Well, I mean, you can't say it's not going to happen again. You can't. I mean, you can't say that. There's a tremendous fan base.
Never say never.
Say never. I know it was a great era, and I know that it was kind of building to something, and Steve Gibson, I'm assuming, put so much of his own money into that run and the subsequent success that followed it. But the training ground is great. The fan base is great. The stadium is still really, really nice. There's huge potential there. Now, I don't know what the finances of the club are right now. I know that, there's been some good players left over the last couple of seasons, which has hurt the team going forward. Michael Carrick, I met a long time ago when we were both playing in Dubai. I think I met him. Seemed a lovely, lovely chap, and is doing a great job. My son fills me in with all the details and the way that they play, and they've hit some form where they had a rough start, et cetera, et cetera. I'm afraid, and we'll get on to what I do now. Ownership is key. Ownership is key. And when Steve Gibson has enough, or, whatever the next kind of owner is, it's so, so bloody important, isn't it? You get the right owner that's got some money. And it really, really is. And we talk about it a lot with the Premier League teams and who the owners are right now. Do they want to win? Are they bothered? Do they want to spend money? Are they there to try and take money out of their club? So, Steve Gibson, absolute legend for me. I mean, I don't know, the ins and outs and the details of recent years, but the way he treated me, for the most part, was pretty bloody amazing. And where the club has come from, and the training ground, and everything else around it. So, no, it's ownership, and the club is going to need to try and find the right direction when that change comes. I mean, Steve Gibson's still a pretty young guy. I get it. So unless there's been talk of that, I can't imagine him going anywhere. It's difficult. It's recruitment. It's recruiting the right staff, the right director of football, the right recruiting person, and the right coach. Those two parts of it, I talk about it in our shows here. Those two parts of a club are so bloody important. And if you can get those two areas right, the recruiting guy and the coach of the team, then you can go places. And we've seen it. We've seen the teams that are in the Premier League right now, small clubs, Bournemouth, Brentford, they get small. They've just got incredibly talented people off the field to organise and recruit. And anything is possible. So there's still big future in Middlesbrough in the top flight.
Well, at the moment, Middlesbrough undoubtedly have the right owner and chairman in charge. I think 99.9% of fans think it's the right head coach and Michael Carrick, who has been impressive. And there are a lot of promising youngsters. They need to have a more stable summer this year than last year when they lost a lot of their key players. And if they can hang on, it's been a major boost this week, Isaiah Jones signing a new contract. If they can keep Hackney, Latte certainly settled into English football, and I think there's a pretty promising platform for them to have a sustained promotion push come August. But let's turn to your new career. Now, I was listening to the Rest Is Football podcast with Gary Lineker, Micah Richards and Alan Shearer. And Alan was talking about his recent trip to Nashville, which I understand he bumped into you. You were there when there were a lot of big name former Premier League players for a festival of football in Tennessee.
Ian, my experiences in the US now and feeling like I'm the luckiest guy in the world to do the studio analyzing for NBC Sports covering the Premier League is so amazing. And gosh, the thrills that I got from my playing career over that period of time in Middlesbrough, I'm enjoying this almost as much. I mean, of course, nothing replaces playing, but being paid to watch football, talk about football, with an amazing company like NBC is brilliant. And these fan fests are basically celebration parties. They're watching parties on match days, on Saturday and Sunday, in different cities around America where we're trying to grow the audience. And yeah, the Premier League are really into these fan fests. They put a lot of money into organizing them. And of course, they send their ambassadors, you know. So Shearer comes, Rob Lee was there from Newcastle, and just different players from all clubs. We interview them. It's just a brilliant time. And Alan Shearer, being fantastic, who he is, it's important that he's there. He comes onto the stage. We analyze a game. We go through halftime highlights. We talk about a game afterwards. We cover every game here in the Premier League, every game. So,
fantastic,
you know, Saturdays are long. Yeah, there's an early game, the middle games, which are the 10 o'clock in Eastern time, 3 o'clock, and the late game. So there's a three-game window that we do. And, yeah, Alan Shearer's great value, very chatty. We had a nice dinner with him on the last night. So it's remarkable, and I'm so thankful for this opportunity here. And it was Dave Roberts, a guy who used to interview me for Sky Sports. I know you guys know Dave Roberts very well.
Yes, know Dave very well.
And Dave said, I remember him saying to me one time at the Rockcliffe Training Ground, you know, if you ever come to America, look me up because I'm going to go there and work for ESPN, and you know, they might be interested in speaking to you. So a few years later, there I was, and I gave Dave a call after about a year of being here. I did a little bit of coaching initially here at Boston College, which was great. And Dave introduced me to ESPN, and I started doing game commentaries, started doing studio shows. Fantastic. I did that for 5 years. And then NBC, who got the rights to the Premier League, were looking around at former Premier League players that seemed to be okay on TV. And I was one of those guys. And that was 2013, changed my life really, because the Premier League now is, through the company, through our coverage, It's thriving. It really is thriving. The numbers are going up really well, and it's a joy to be a part of.
And you're arguably more famous now as a broadcast than you were as a footballer. I've got to ask you this question: so who's more widely recognised in the States, yourself or Alan Shearer and Rob Lee?
Bloody great question. For sure, me. If we're walking through an airport, for example, it's probably me. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, I mean. Yeah, I mean, that's how crazy.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
I mean, obviously the immediate fans would know Alan Shearer. The hardcore fans, of course. But you know, we're watched by millions, and you know, they see me every. You think about it; they see me every bloody almost every Saturday and Sunday morning for hours on NBC and on the different channels, on Peacock, on USA Network. So. It's a strange kind of metric, but in these, it's 11th year now we're doing this. It's like the longer it's gone on, the more people come up to me and want to talk about football. Oh, you're one of the Robbies, and how about Liverpool, or how about Arsenal? And we chat. It's a crazy metric. On the train into New York City or in an airport, more and more people now recognizing me and want to talk about football. And that's what we're there for, really, to try and grow the sport and grow the Premier League in the US. And with the competition that there is here for different sports and pros and college, it's not easy, but it's definitely growing. And it's amazing to think that more people recognize me in America than so many others.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, if you've got time for one funny story, I got a funny story for you, which is a similar sort of thing, right? So we're in Manchester, actually, because some games NBC take us over to the UK to do the games pitch side, where we have our desk pitch side. And it's one of those games, and we're going to Old Trafford to watch Man United versus somebody. I think it was against West Ham. This is probably 2 or 3 years ago. And we're in the fancy hotel in Manchester. God, the name escapes me now. Where the players stay before a game. The Lowry. I think it's the Lowry. Is it the Lowry? I think it's the Lowry.
Yes, it's where Mourinho used to stay.
Yeah, I'm in the upstairs like bar area, having a bit of lunch with Robbie Earl. We're having a bit of lunch and stuff, and I'm looking, you know, we're just kind of we're finished up a little bit. Anyway, a guy walks in with a big old beard, and I'm thinking, God, I recognise him. And then afterwards, his wife Trudy walked in, and they walked past our table, and I say to Robbie Earl, "That's Sting. That's Sting there. One of my all-time favourite musicians.
Wow.
Yeah, from Police. Yeah, I've watched him many times in concert. Love the music of Police. Love the music of Sting. He was in that same hotel. Sat in the corner in the bar area with Trudy for a drink or a cup of tea or whatever. So I say to Robbie Earl, wow, I'm going to have to go over there. I'm going to have to go over there and say hi, get a picture or sign something. I've got to tell him, you know, how great he's been for so many years. And then we chat, and I'm like, you know what? He's here with his wife. Like, I shouldn't be interrupting his lunch or his drink or whatever. So I left it. Anyway, we're kind of getting ready to leave. And anyway, there's a blooming shadow comes over our table, and Sting comes over to us and said, "Hi, guy. I just wanted to come and say hi. And I'm like, bloody hell. Like, him and his wife, Trudy, they come over and I said, "I recognise you. You know, obviously, I'm a Newcastle fan. I watch you at weekends." So it knocked my socks off, really. It's like such a bloody... And there's a story going back to what you say, like...
Isn't that fantastic?
Any kind of film stars, musicians, live in the US, they're going to see my flipping ugly face on TV every weekend. And it's just, it's bloody remarkable. But he actually offered us tickets to go to see his concert that night. And I said, "Well, no, we got a game. We're working here. We got to go and cover the Man United game." So that's, I guess, a story on being recognised in America. Amazing.
He went to my old school a few years before I did. But he's part of the St. Cuthbert's Grammar School Newcastle alumni. Listen, I'd love to think that in the next few years you'll be reporting on Middlesbrough and Sunderland in the Premier League as well. And we haven't spoken a lot about Sunderland this week. Macams will have to forgive us for that. But this show has listeners from North Northumberland down to North Yorkshire. But we'll end by asking you about Newcastle, the one team that you will see quite a lot of. What do you think of them and how close are they to winning honours?
Well, I think they've had a disappointing and very stressful season, given they spent a lot of money and a lot of new players ready for this Champions League challenge and to get back up there. And I have got to say, the injuries have been incredible for them. An incredible amount of injuries that they've had to deal with and rotating players. And, you know, gosh, it's been so much for them. And those Champions League games early on were just too much for the team. And I enjoy the way that they played, particularly last year with the energy that they've shown and the way that they're flat out on the front foot attacking. This is sort of stuff that I'm saying over here, of course, and that's difficult. You know, it's a different style, and you need a big squad if you're challenging at the top of the Premier League, and you're going to fight yourselves in the Champions League. You need to have a big squad for that. And the Tonali thing, and the different injuries to the strikers and everybody else, it's been difficult. And with their particular style of play, there was a period, wasn't there? Was it kind of middle of the year when they look absolutely, I think towards the end of the Champions League campaign, the group stage, they look absolutely out on their feet.
They were running on empty, weren't they? They were
running on empty. And I love Eddie Howe. I love the way that he talks. I like the way that he coaches his team. I did say on our show a little bit, you know, maybe there is a time when this has got to revolve a little bit for Newcastle United, that they have got to become a little bit more controlling, a little bit more patient, a little bit more possession-based, instead of the, you know, which is entertaining, and it's kind of your Liverpool 100 million miles an hour football, which they're brilliant at, the physicality that they've got in the midfield, of course, with players in there. Whether there was a, you know, to evolve into where they want to be ultimately, whether that style in certain games or whatever should change a little bit, but other than that, I'm pleased there's not too much pressure on Eddie Howe. It looks like the team's coming together again. The results are good again. Powerful, quick Harvey Barnes signing, you know, he missed such a large part of it. Anthony Gordon's kind of progression, really, from when he started at the club, you know, he's been outstanding. And I gotta say, I'm a huge fan of Alexander Isak up front. Huge fan. I mean, I think he's a wonderful, wonderful player. He's a super player. Like in terms of what he can do, is what I would enjoy a centre forward to be able to do, to have some skill, you know, a couple of moves, quick, good finisher, cool, great mentality, attitude towards it all. So I really like him. But there's a lot to like about the team. It's just been a very challenging, difficult season. And we went, was it a couple of years ago? We've had a couple of games. Again, we take our show on the road. Yeah. We went to St. James's Park. I think we saw them beat Tottenham. They hammered. No, it was Villa. Was it Villa they hammered? Oh, I don't know.
Yes,
don't
know. Yes.
Yeah, was that was it. Opening day.
Yeah. But Tonali scored very early on, didn't he?
Yeah. That's it. He looked $1 million, didn't he? He looked really, really good. Beginning of last season, I think, wasn't it? Just to say the atmosphere and stuff was amazing there, and you know, and I'm lucky to have scored a couple of goals at St. James's, so I always bring that up on air, you know, make sure that the Americans know that, you know,
they must have scored
at St. James's. But no, brilliant. I love going back to the North East. And just also, by the way, we have had Middlesbrough on our air. We've had Middlesbrough in the Premier League, and yes, we did a game at the Riverside, and I got a lovely, you know, I got a lovely kind of round of applause from... you know what? It was stewards, because we get to the stadium really, really early, and I guess they recognised me from jumping in the stadium with the crew, and they give me a lovely bloody round of applause as stewards, just who were getting ready for the match. And yeah, it's wonderful. I did a little piece in the camera from the dressing room, telling a few stories. So yeah, the NBC are really great at bringing personalised stories into it, and it was lovely to go to Middlesbrough with them being in the Premier League and me covering it for NBC. And as you said, Ian, let's hope, fingers crossed, it's not going to be too long before I can start doing that again. We've got four more years on this current deal, and that's getting Middlesbrough back in there in these 4 years.
Robbie, I could chat to you all night, but as you say, wouldn't it be lovely if you know, a good 15% of your show every week was talking about the three North East
teams? Oh, it'd be great.
Because, you know, I want to see Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough right up there, and the sooner it happens, the better. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and
you're very welcome.
It's the first time, it won't be the last. I'd love to have you on again sometime. Thanks very much, Robbie.
Pleasure, mate. Pleasure's all mine. No, thanks very much. Thanks for your kind words. All the best.
Take care. All the best, Robbie. All the best.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
My goodness, you can tell Robbie's a professional broadcaster. What a magnificent talk he is.
Yeah.
And, We could have spoken all night, couldn't we?
I'll be honest, Ian. I'm a little bit starstruck because you know, that I grew up with Robbie and the team. You know, that was my you know, teenage years through the 90s, supporting the Borough, and yeah, I'm a huge fan and so proud of him. You know, when get to see him on the American footage, just brilliant. So
the very first guest we had on the Black, White, Red All Over show, I don't know if you can remember, Darren, was someone very similar to Robbie. It was Michael Bridges. Now, Michael's back in the North East, and you see him look north now, and he's a Leeds United ambassador. But he did a very similar project to Robbie in Australia, presenting the match of the day in Australia with the likes of Harry Kewell. And I think Mark Schwarter would be a regular guest on that as well. And so, you know, it's nice to know that some of the North East finest have gone on to flourish in alternative careers, isn't it?
Absolutely. All right, Ian, we're just going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with our next guest on Black and White and Red All Over.
Hey, how do you fancy getting involved in the fastest growing radio network in the UK?
Well, you would need Harry Potter as a physio, wouldn't you, really?
He sounds like a poor man's Riley McGree, to be honest with you.
Thank you, everybody that's taken part in Name That Theme.
They've got players there who are more than capable.
I don't want any BS.
There are so many ways that you can get involved. We're looking for presenters, producers, technical operators, social media and content creators, and so much more. If one of those has your name on it, then don't delay. Get in touch via email. It's admin@ragroupuk.com. That email again, it's easy. admin@ragroupuk.com. Come and get involved in your local radio stations that are really getting somewhere.
This is Elton John.
Hello, I'm Phil Collins.
This is not just any old 80s show. Join me for 80s Mint. 2 hours of the best 80s music and memories. Right here, every Saturday night from 9 and Sundays from noon.
black and white and red all over. 3 decades of reporting North East football. Ian Murta.
The Cat, the Tune and the Red.
Now we've had more than 25 minutes of a Borough Fest, which I'm sure every smoggy would have drooled over listening to Robbie Musto talking about his time at on Teesside and of course his new career as one of the top broadcasters at NBC across the pond. And my next guest is covers Newcastle United, home and away. But Darren, I think we haven't spent much time discussing Sunderland this week, but ironically, they are the only team playing this weekend. They've got Millwall at home tomorrow to return to the stadium in light for the ever-popular Duncan Watmore.
Yes.
Now, Sunderland, you know, there's this great stat, isn't there? They've kept clean sheets in 5 of the last 6 games. But the one that they didn't keep a clean sheet in, they got hammered 5-1. So at the moment, you know, Sunderland, they're in mid-table. They're not going to go up. They're not going to go down. But there are a few seeds of optimism there now, aren't there, with the win at West Brom last week and the fact that the players do seem to be playing for the interim manager, Mike Dodds.
Yeah, I think so. I think they seem to have turned that corner. And it was a bleak couple of weeks, wasn't it?
A couple of months.
And the whole Beale situation. And we were chatting to Ted, who's the Sunderland fan who's on the North East Footy Breakfast this morning. And he's still, you know, he still feels as though the club's still in limbo. You know, yes, they started to turn a corner in terms of pick up some of the results. I think the win at West Brom last week was a huge relief. The clean sheets have been great. They haven't necessarily been great performances, though. There's still that feeling amongst the fans that, you know, something needs to be done and something, you know, yes, it. Well, I think the expression this morning is it feels as though they're crawling on their hands and knees towards the end of the season. I think it is a hope, isn't it, that they make an appointment quickly so that they can start the start of the summer with a real positive view. You know, yes, let's get to the end of the season and get some decent results. But, you know, get an appointment made early, you know, start to look towards the season, you know, bringing in some players as well that need to be sort out some of those contracts that need to be. The whole Jack Clark situation, that needs sorting early, you know, without it hanging over. But, you know, I one of the comments this week, you know, because this week they've released some retro kits, which...
That's right, from the Hummel from the 1992.
The Hummel stuff. That's right. And, you know, it almost feels like that's an attempt at the club to say, look, you know, we're trying here. You know, stick with us. It's going to be a good summer. And so I think there's some optimism there from the fans, but it's something, you know...
It's of the cautious variety.
Yes.
And I still maintain to this day that had they kept Tony Mowbray, they would be going into tomorrow's game against Millwall in playoff contention.
Yeah.
But listen, my next guest has the honour of being the youngest guest we've had on the show. He is the newest and the very welcome addition to the North East Press Corps. It's Jordan Cronin of Newcastle World. Now, a lot of the Toon Army put Newcastle's transformation from relegation struggles to European contenders down to Mike Ashley's departure. Some put it down to Eddie Howe's arrival, but it also coincided with Jordan starting covering Newcastle United on a daily basis. So, Jordan, the first question, are you the real Geordie Messiah?
I think I am, yeah.
Good answer.
It's been some time covering Newcastle. Been a lot of bad times, but I suppose I've only seen the good times.
You missed them all, yes. You do realise you've had it easy as a sports journalist covering Newcastle, unlike the rest of us who've covered many relegations, many disappointments, many lowlights.
Yeah, I mean, quite fortunate to witness the highs of Eddie Howe era in terms of going on route this season, visiting Champions League grounds. Fingers crossed I can get it in Europe next season, but yeah, it's been good times. Hopefully, the continue under Eddie Howe and the owners.
Now, I don't know your exact age, but, you know, there's so many comparisons with Eddie Howe's free-scoring side and the entertainers of Kevin Keegan, but I would be guessing you can't remember the entertainers.
Yeah, so I turned 27 in May, so I think I was born just after or during the entertainers era. So, look, you hear lots of stories from your granddad and your dad. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of this season, I suppose Newcastle, as chaotic a team, probably has been closest to the entertainers they've had in terms of all the goals and all the goals they've conceded. But, you know, I would like less chaos and, you know, sort of good balance entertainment as well, but less chaos because some games this season have been totally bonkers, even the last one to West Ham, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're making us all feel very old. But before we talk, we focus purely on Newcastle. I'm very interested to hear somebody of your age and your view on these FA Cup changes. I mean, I've got to admit, it's riled me. But, you know, you are very much of this millennium, by which stage the FA Cup had lost a lot of its aura from when I was a kid and a young journalist. So are you as annoyed as I suspect an awful lot of our listeners will be at the scrapping of replays, which seems to further downgrade the FA Cup at the expense of the Premier League and the Champions League, etc.?
Yeah, I'll use a really, really strong word here. I think the decision to scrap replays is disgraceful.
Glad you said that.
Prior to covering Newcastle, I was fortunate enough to work in non-league volunteer clubs like North Shields, St Red Star, Blyth Spartans, and I see how much the FA Cup means to them. Now, this isn't just a financial decision, because, you know, the FA and Premier League have tried to look and go, well, you know, we are giving these non-league clubs £33 million a year, whatever. It isn't just about the money. It's about the magic of the FA Cup. And for me, correct, that's been dwindling for a lot of years now. And this decision now to scrap replays puts the FA Cup further down in my estimation, to be honest. I've seen what's done for Blyth Spartans, a big giant killing team, if you like, in the FA Cup. The thrill of getting replays at big grounds for the non-league clubs, it just takes away that magic. And I find it really disappointing and disheartening that, you know, non-league clubs have seen the reaction from clubs, even clubs in League One and Two, the reaction to this decision. It's disgraceful, and I hope football can stand up against it, because it's just further evidence that who governs football now, it's pretty much the Premier League. The FA are trying to hop on the back of the Premier League because finances are stark between the FA and Premier League. Yes. So for me, I want to see clubs now protest against it and try and get the FA Cup back to the competition it once was, because it was a special competition. It still can be a special competition, but they're making some ludicrous decisions. And, you know, the decision to scrap replays as early as round one, as I said at the start, is just disgraceful in my opinion.
Jordan's spoken like a true football veteran. And, you know, you did cut your teeth at Blyth Spartans. And I can remember when I was a kid going to St James's Park after Blyth had held Wrexham 1-1 at the racecourse ground, a game they should have actually won in the fifth round. And it was a lockout at St James's Park. I can remember that. It was pouring weather. I went along with my Celtic scarf, which is same colours as Blyth Spartans, and standing in the Gallagate end, I was at school the next day. But it's still, you know, I've reported on hundreds and hundreds of games in my career. I watched many, many before then, but that is still one of the great football memories I ever had. Although Blyth lost 2-1, it was a memory, and we're not going to have memories like that again. And, you know, you've been very fortunate this year covering Champions League football for Newcastle World, but I would maintain that in this country there are far more fans, even millions more, who take an interest more in the FA Cup than they do in the Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how many teams enter the FA Cup at the beginning of the season? 500 plus, from right down the bottom of the pyramid. It's such a special competition because there's no other competition in the world that gives clubs that low down the pyramid an opportunity to pit the wits against, in some occasions, Premier League football clubs. And that's why it was such a magical competition. And that's why the need to look at this decision and reverse it. Do I think that'll happen? I seen the FA statement today. It was almost like, yeah, we acknowledge your concerns, but basically we don't care. So that's why I think it's really important that, I say, clubs across the country now unite against this and try and get some change in the decision, because I say that the FA Cup has lost its magic. It's lost its magic even more after announcement of this week. It's about time that the people in, you know, clubs lower down this country take back some control against these Premier League clubs and the FA, who have, I say, have almost joined forces with the Premier League in many ways.
Yeah, I look forward to reading a hard-hitting Jordan Cronin column on Newcastle World in the near future. And, you know, as I say, if every journalist articulates their feelings about it as well as you have, then I think there's a real bandwagon going, because it's not just fans, it is the media. And I'd love to see players join in talking about, you know, their memories. And I spoke earlier in the programme, Jordan, about some of the great, great games which wouldn't have existed had you not had replays. Now, Newcastle probably have preferred Hereford 2, Newcastle 1 in the third round replay not to have happened. But there again, you know, there have been times when Newcastle have benefited. But let's move on from that. And I'm going to ask you another difficult question. Talking about this financial fair play, and I don't want to go into the nitty-gritty of that, but it's been well stated more by Darren Eales of Newcastle than anyone else, that Newcastle may have to sell one of their top stars. Bruno Guimaraes, it's been revealed today, has just invested in new property in the northeast, which suggests he will probably stay. Will Alexander Isak be wearing a black and white shirt next season, Jordan?
Yeah, that is a difficult question, because I think it's no secret that Alexander Isak has plenty of admirers across world football.
He's always
linked with Arsenal. I think Arsenal have tracked him since his younger days, even when he started out in Sweden. So I think the interest will be there, but I'll look at it and think, how many teams can afford an Alexander Isak? And I don't think there's many, to be honest. Newcastle bought him for 60.
But teams that will be in the Champions League next season can afford him. I mean, I'm talking in Arsenal. If I was Mikel Arteta, and I suspect after going out in the Champions League, I suspect they will just narrowly miss out on the title this year. If I was Arteta, I would be going to my board and saying the missing piece in this jigsaw is Alexander Isak. Now, I'm not trying to sell him to Arsenal, but he looks tailor-made for that club, and he's exactly what that club needs. And more ominously, he's a player who does deserve Champions League football.
Yeah, and that's a difficult thing Newcastle have got, because you mentioned Bruno Guimaraes there as well. They've got two top-level players, and Newcastle won't be playing Champions League football next season. They're even in the battle to finish in Europe altogether. So if you miss out on Europe, is that enough to keep these top-level players? It's difficult. I think staying in Europe is the easiest option for Newcastle. But in terms of these players' futures, Newcastle in many ways hold the keys, albeit, you know, Bruno's got a £100 million release clause, but the player seems happy. Yeah, you mentioned there at the start about the new home that he's built. That's sort of an indication that he sees his future here long-term, if you like. So you can see that he's really happy here. It's about if someone meets that release clause, which I think, again, is there many teams that are going to spend £100 million on a midfielder in the summer? I suppose PSG is probably the most likely, because it sounds like Kylian Mbappe is going to go to Real Madrid. And the wages are astronomical. So for PSG to be free of Mbappe's wages, are probably freezing it. They're going to spend quite a bit of money in the summer transfer window. Is Bruno the man that they see and the man that they want? We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, in terms of Isak, you mentioned Arsenal there, of course he'd be a perfect fit. We've seen this season Thierry Henry. There's so many comparisons between Isak and Thierry Henry, the way he's out silky, he's out the pitch. He's just an excellent footballer, but I just hope that Newcastle can do enough to keep him. Again, seems like another player who seems happy here. I don't think Newcastle will entertain any offers unless the player himself forces a move, which I don't think will happen. So it's going to be interesting.
It'll
just be all the uncertainty.
I agree. Can I ask you, you are still relatively new in the job, but have you enjoyed this season as much as last? Because, you're not a fan, you're a journalist, and it has been more of a challenge from a journalistic point of view this season, because there have been times when you've had to be a little more critical than you might have been last year, when things went along pretty swimmingly, didn't they?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you mentioned that I'm sort of only 2.5 years into covering Newcastle full time, so in many ways I'm sort of learning on the job. And yeah, last season was really easy to report on because it was, there were so many highs. But this season, I think in many ways has been very difficult to report on, because it's been a strange one, because there has been highs, PSG in the Champions League example, and they've had some good results in the cup as well, Man City, Man United in the Carabao Cup. So there's been some highs there, but from December onwards until probably the last couple of weeks when Newcastle have showed a little bit of life, it's been a disappointing season and a really difficult one to report on. Now, I know there's been a mixed sort of reaction from Newcastle United fans in terms of their view on Eddie Howe. I know a lot of them believe in Eddie Howe, but when things got tough, there was a few calling for his head. Whether that's just social media noise or not, but it became very vocal at points during, I say, from December when they'd be on this bad run. But for me, I think just on Eddie Howe's future, what he's achieved for this football club and the time that he's been here so far has been nothing short of remarkable. I think he's got enough credit in the bank to turn things around and be back in the summer. I think we've seen the last few weeks
I couldn't agree more. Now, I opened the show introducing you as the Geordie Messiah. And, a lot of fans, why have Newcastle taken off in the last 2 years? A lot of people say it's Eddie Howe. And a lot of people say it's Mike Ashley's departure. Now, there's a player I've spoken to quite regularly who absolutely loves Eddie Howe. Never say a word against him. But he also loved Steve Bruce. And he maintains that the reason Newcastle take it off, it wasn't Mike Ashley personally, it was the fact, as soon as Mike Ashley went, this black cloud lifted from the club. And he said he just felt that a straitjacket which they'd been playing with had been released, and all of a sudden the shackles were off and there was a feel-good factor. And while, Eddie Howe undoubtedly is a key reason for Newcastle's upwardly mobile 2 seasons, the catalyst was Mike Ashley's exit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think under Mike Ashley, this was a football club that just stagnated and just existed, had no ambition. You compare to the 90s, the Keegan era, even the Savoy Robson era. It was a club with ambition, one on the up. It was even one that broke the transfer record at one point, and it was such a shadow of what it was. And to get rid of Mike Ashley almost just freed the football club. Again, you could feel the relief. And it's just, that's all people want in this region, and Newcastle fans just want to feel hope and feel ambition. And that's what the new owners have done straight away. And
yep.
I think Eddie Howe is a massive part of that. I don't think there's many other managers in world football that could have took Newcastle from relegation candidates to top four. He's done that. But of course, the backing from the owners, which, you mentioned FFP at the start there, that's been something that's probably held them back. But they certainly backed Eddie Howe, and everyone's sort of seeking the rewards at this moment in time. Of course, I say we've seen that it can get a little bit disappointed time, so I think there's a long journey ahead for Newcastle to be that sort of club competing right up among Europeans best. But certainly the first 2.5 years under the new owners have been nothing short of incredible, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, as our debuts go, Jordan, yours has been as impressive as Tonali's was in August against Aston Villa. But let's see how good you are at predictions. And the standard's not been very high this season, either for myself or my guests. There's only one of our clubs is playing this weekend. It's Sunderland at home to Millwall tomorrow. Sunderland, of course, they're mid-table, can't go up, can't go down. But the signs that they are pulling out of the slump. How do you see that game going at the Stadium of Light, Jordan?
Yes, it's been an interesting season for Sunderland. I mean, they've got nothing to play for now until a couple of results ago. They looked like they were just heading into nothing, really. Heading down the table. Obviously, can't go down, but nothing to play for. Fans are becoming frustrated, but they've had a couple of results now to pull themselves around, basically. And I do think that Sunderland will continue their winning streak against Millwall. You sense the players are playing for the fans again, playing for pride, playing for their own futures. So I think Sunderland will win that one. If I have to give a score prediction, I'll go.
You do
for 2-0. Sunderland.
I'll go 2-0 as well. And Middlesbrough are on television against Flagging Leeds on Monday night. Now, Middlesbrough, barring a miracle, won't go up. They'll probably finish 7th or 8th, but they've put together a 9-match unbeaten run. Can you see them putting another nail into Leeds' automatic promotion coffin?
Yeah, I can't actually. It's just unfortunate that Borough picked up form at sort of the wrong time, because the games have run out for them, unfortunately. But
yeah,
Leeds are a team that are faltered in recent weeks. I didn't expect them to lose at Blackburn at the weekend. They've been so flawless in the middle of the part of the season. It feels like that sort of purple patch that we're talking about, it feels like Leeds United are on it. So there's a bit of spice between Middlesbrough and Leeds, I think I'm right in believing. So
yes, it's a derby of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm sure Borough want to, as you mentioned there, put that nail in Leeds' coffin. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 Borough victory.
Right, now you'll be heading down to Crystal Palace in midweek. And when I was on the road with the North East teams, it was one of my least favourite trips. It's awkward to get to Selhurst Park, and also the press box isn't the best. But and of course, maybe if I'd asked you this a week ago and said, how will Newcastle do against Palace, you might have predicted a win. But how have things changed since that magnificent performance against Liverpool?
I just think Crystal Palace, Selhurst Park, is such a difficult place for Newcastle to go that they don't tend to get good results down there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a game that's got a draw written all over it, to be honest, if you go off the previous trips. So yeah, going to be a difficult game for Newcastle. I think it'll be a 1-1 draw, but you never know, they might sneak it.
Great minds think alike. I'm going for a 1-1 draw at Selhurst Park next Wednesday, and I also think that Middlesbrough Leeds might be a draw as well. So it's been lovely having you on the show, Jordan, and as I say, I'm going to send a tape of your comments about FA Cup replays to the Premier League. Let them hear what you said.
Thanks, Ian.
All the best.
Well, thanks, Ian. Another brilliant black and white and red all over. You have a lovely, lovely weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
You will do. All the best, everyone.
Cheers.